There. We're doing great today. Welcome back to Horse Talk. This is going to be part two of our two-part series on bulls. In the studio with us today is Dr. Katie Timko, hot off her book chapter writing that she's been doing for the past week. So thought we'd just kind of ask her some questions more about bull. Book should be published in about a year. What's a chapter? 200 pages, maybe?
Yep.
200, 300 pages. So if you guys want to read that, I'm sure she would love if you would read her chapter. But otherwise, we'll just give you the cliff notes of it today. The last time we were kind of discussing foals, I don't think we really touched on like what a normal foal is, like what your normal foal should be doing. That way you kind of know it's abnormal. So let's just kind of set the scene. Mom has a normal birth, baby's born. What's kind of the processes that we should expect for this newborn foal?
Yeah, so once that foal is born, it should start to kind of right itself and put itself up into sternal recumbency within the first few minutes even. So it's not going to be able to get up yet, but it should start to sit up, maybe look around for mom, and some of them even have a suckle already from the time they're born. Within the first hour or so, they should be making those attempts to stand, and hopefully by the first hour, between 1 to 2 hours, they're actually able to successfully stand. And then shortly after that, start searching for the udder and hopefully latch on and nurse within, again, that first 1 to 2 hours of birth. If they are not doing those things, they might need some assistance. We'll kind of touch on some issues on maybe why a foal has trouble standing. Maybe they have some contracture or laxity of their joints. So they might need a little bit of assistance if they don't have the strength or ability to kind of totally get up on their own.
Yeah, so what can the owner do on the farm? Can they point the foal in the right direction? Is that helpful if they're like kind of bumping its elbow and not its udder? Or
if you've got a foal that just has been kind of searching for the udder for a little while and hasn't really found it, you can hold the mare. Sometimes the mares are walking around and having a hard time to let the foal nurse. They're kind of getting to the area and then they move. So hold the mare and then you can kind of point them at least to the hind end. You cannot make a foal latch on and nurse. It's kind of like you can take a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Same with a foal. You cannot make them latch on, but you can kind of head them in the right direction.
Yeah, so you can't grab the teat and put it in its mouth.
No, they just won't.
Yeah.
if they're not ready, they won't.
Okay. Or you'll give them aspiration pneumonia. Yeah. Say a normal foal, it eats its little milk meal. It's going to lay down for like half hour.
Yeah, so they nurse, they lay down. They'll lay down for 20-30 minutes, pop back up. Usually they urinate and or defecate, and then they go back over, nurse, lay down. They kind of
so every hour they should be eating.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're noticing that the foal is not eating within the first hour or even latching on, then there could be an issue, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and there's a lot of things that can cause that. We can kind of go through, though. I like to go through those so the clients are aware. I think one of the things, too, that I've had clients, like, they say the foal is nursing because it's making weird noises, but you actually have to kind of witness it, right?
Yeah, you got to watch because sometimes they're sucking on the stifle or just around the udder, but not actually latched on to the teat and successfully drinking milk.
Right. And for the veterinarian, we're not going to intervene with an IgG. We're not going to know the foal didn't get enough colostrum until 18 hours. So, but the foal can't go 18 hours without milk.
Yeah.
It'll be dead. Yes. They have, what, more brown fat? Is that what they have used? That's why they need their glucose?
Yeah, they can really only maintain their blood glucose for a really short amount of time. So if this foal is laying down and having trouble getting up, they're going to become hypoglycemic within just a few hours of not nursing, especially shortly after birth.
So they're not nursing. There can be multiple issues. So they can have weird leg issues, right? So what are some of the leg stuff that we see with these guys?
The most common issues are either contracture or laxity. So laxity is when you kind of look at the foal, maybe their back fetlocks are almost on the ground. They're kind of super loose and make it difficult for them to get up on their own. And then the opposite of laxity is going to be contracture. A lot of times we see that in the knees or the fetlocks where they're kind of knuckled over almost in those areas. And that can, again, make it really hard for these foals to stand successfully on their own.
So what are we going to do to treat those?
So we treat them different. So laxity really, that oftentimes gets better on its own just as that foal gets stronger and moves around. Contracture is where we're actually going to put bandages on to kind of loosen up those joints and tendons that are super contracted. Think that because your foal's fetlocks are on the ground, you need to put a bandage on and support that, but that would actually do the complete opposite and make it
work. Tell those people, usually it's just to turn the foal out, right?
Yeah,
to
have run them move around and it'll kind of get better.
They'll get stronger on their own. That one's easier to fix. That just needs some motion. If the foal is very lax, you're going to need to be there to get it up every hour.
Exactly. So, you know, while it might fix itself over the first 72 hours, while that's happening, you might need to help that foal get up every hour.
Yes, yeah, so you need to either take some time off from work or send the foal into the hospital. Probably send the foal into the hospital, but, you know, take time off work if you... That's what the breeding farms do, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in a big breeding farm, they help them get up every hour. So the contractures, that's more of an issue, right? That's harder. That can be hard, too.
Yeah, and there's a big range. Some are very mild, where maybe one or two bandages for 2 days will kind of take care of it. Others are to the point where, you know, that animal can't stand up. So we have to use splints, bandages, and even specific medications to kind of help loosen up those tendons.
And those foals will need help getting up with their big bandages.
Yeah, they'll need help getting up. They might need help even staying standing while they nurse.
I think they're painful, right?
They're very painful. They're usually on pain medications at the
same
time.
Because it's pulling so much tension, because tendons are from muscle bellies, so the muscle bellies are so extended right now that they're really painful animals.
Yeah, so they'll need some pain meds and definitely a lot of support.
Ketafin, meloxicam, what's your go-to? Banamine?
Yeah, carprofen, meloxicam. Mm-hmm. Even the ones that are really, really bad in the hospital, sometimes we can even put a fentanyl patch on them.
Fentanyl patch?
For a few days.
Oh, no. So. It'd be heroin addicts. Yeah. You gotta be careful with the fentanyl patch. One time when I was an intern, we had a horse that had severe laminitis. So we put fentanyl patches on him. And the overnight tech was, he just kind of watched the horses. So my wife and I were on our third date, and the tech called me, and he's like, the patches are off the horse, and you're not supposed to touch the fentanyl patches because you'll get high.
Yeah.
So I had to break our date, and then we were in Ocala, Florida. Heather, we have to run back to the clinic because there's fentanyl patches randomly on the ground, and the groom might or might not eat them. I don't know what's happening. So we rescued the horse. We put his fentanyl patches back on. And then it was 11 o'clock at night. Ocala, Florida, the only restaurant that was open was Hooters. So, again, our third date, second or third date. And I'm like, well, I'm hungry. We need to eat.
We're going to Hooters.
And so you're in, middle Ocala, Florida, the Hooters off I-75. Main event was UFC Fight Night. What a third date. I mean, I'm surprised that she's still with me. We had to eat at Hooters, and it's UFC Fight Night in Central Florida. It was a crowd that I was not used to being around. Let's just say that. But the groom did not get high on the fentanyl. I was very nervous that the overnight techs were going to... I don't know what they were going to do with the fentanyl. But I was, you're super scared of leaving fentanyl around a barn.
Yeah,
especially now. That was 2006. Imagine nowadays. Yeah. It'll be under lock and key. Does that make the foals pretty slow, though?
Not really. It does seem to help with their pain quite a bit, too. And you don't have to give anything orally.
Yeah.
They just kind of wear the patch.
And that's good, because the NSAIDs are, pretty toxic to their kidneys.
Yeah, and their GI tract. And
yeah, because the little foals get ulcers, really. And we need their kidneys to work, because the milk is so low in sodium. So they have to be able to keep all that sodium. Yeah. And then people talk about giving them oxytetracycline, which is an antibiotic that's supposed to bind calcium. Have you had success with that?
So we can use that medication for more severe contractures, from the ones that are, in the hospital wearing splints and on those pretty intense pain medications. And it can help kind of loosen up those tendons and in conjunction with your other treatments.
Yeah. But oxytet's nephrotoxic, though.
Yes. Yeah. So that's why, we need to make sure that foal is nursing and or on fluids when they're getting that treatment, because if they aren't, then it can be damaging to the kidneys.
Yeah. The other thing that foals don't eat right away is, we call it equine maladjustment syndrome. Is that the new word? What's our newest term for the old dummy foal?
Neonatal encephalopathy.
Neonatal encephalopathy
is the current term.
Keeps changing, huh?
Yeah, because there's a couple different mechanisms as to how they can become this, but the kind of term that most people are familiar with are this dummy foal syndrome.
So what is the mechanisms? What happens to the little brains?
So some thought processes, and for some foals we think there's some sort of hypoxic event, usually in the case of a dystocia, which is a difficult birth. So that foal takes maybe longer than 30 minutes to be born. There was premature separation of the placenta, and at some point in this process they were hypoxic and didn't get enough oxygen, which in turn can cause some brain damage.
I think that happens in humans.
It can happen in humans. There are foals that have a completely normal, fully normal birth. They're totally normal for the first 24, 48 hours, but then they start to progress and show some of these signs. The thought process for those animals is that there's some sort of hormone imbalance and they haven't really transitioned from that intrauterine quiet environment to this extrauterine real life environment, and their hormones are all off balance and they're kind of still in this sleepy mode where they were in the uterus.
Sleepy mode.
Yeah.
I want to be in sleepy mode.
Yeah.
But do they have, you said encephalopathy? Is that the... So like they say the brain is just not functioning right?
Yeah,
is that
it just kind of encompasses these two different pathophysiologies, but there's neurologic issues with both.
And do we know what hormones yet?
Some of them are like the progesterones, allopregnanolone, just progesterone in general, and those kind of are higher in these foals that are in that kind of sleepy state. And if you give a foal one of those hormones, it can actually kind of put them into like a dummy foal state and make them go to sleep.
I guess that would make sense. Progesterone is like what the mare is producing to maintain the pregnancy, so it's making the baby sleepy while it's in utero.
And there's a lot of different forms of the progesterones that kind of are involved and have different levels and need to decrease once they're born.
Probably. So one of the treatments for dummy foals is the Madigan squeeze. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Madigan is a UC Davis internal medicine expert, and he kind of came, I don't know where he came up with this idea, but do you?
I'm not sure. You know, if you're just kind of dealing with foals in general and you are restraining them and holding them, they do have a reflex where if you kind of squeeze them, they kind of fall over sometimes. So this Madigan squeeze is using ropes to kind of go around their torso and put this specific squeeze pressure on certain points. And it's supposed to kind of mimic the birthing process again as they're coming out of the cervix and produce this squeeze to kind of shift these hormones, hopefully, from that intrauterine environment to extrauterine life.
You have to be careful with it, though, right? You don't want to suffocate them.
Yeah, and you want to make sure that we don't have any broken ribs or anything that those pressure points could cause a problem.
Yeah, it's kind of like casting a cow.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
It's very similar, but I did one the other day, and maybe it was successful, but we did it early on. Like, I think if you, like, the client was very astute. She said, I don't think my foal is suckling very well. And, you know, he's kind of, like, holding his tongue out a little. So, like, he's not all there. But he had a normal birth.
Yeah.
So, and I think that might be the difference, too, right? If you had a dystocia and you're oxygen deprived, I don't think squeezing the foal is going to help.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
if you are hormone imbalanced, maybe I call it his rebirth.
Yeah.
So, he was reborn. We didn't baptize him, though. I thought we could, like, baptize him, maybe, like, his rebirth. Maybe an hour later, he started nursing. Whether it was just, we did tube him with milk, because he hadn't really nursed for a couple hours, so maybe that helped him. It's kind of hard to say, right? Like, in Madigan's research, he says they're 3 times more likely to not be a dummy foal afterwards, but I don't know.
You know, you made a good point where this was early on, it wasn't very severe, so these are the times to kind of intervene with this procedure. If they're more progressive and further along and not getting up at all, or, you know, having other neurologic abnormalities like seizures, we're beyond the point where this squeeze is going to help or do much.
If you're at 24 hours, I don't think the squeeze is happening. The literature says up to 3 days, but I think it has to, if you think about the physiology, it has to be early. So having early veterinary intervention is going to be key if this is going to work at all.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, and again, it's only like 20 pounds of pressure, I do not suggest any person just go out there and start tying ropes around their foal. You will probably suffocate it. Don't do that. Have your veterinarian do the Madigan squeeze. What else? How else do we treat these foals?
They're not lucky enough to just respond to that. Most of these foals do need to go into the hospital because they need nutritional support while they're learning to nurse. I've had foals that have taken over a week to learn to nurse. And so during that time, they're going to be fed with a feeding tube. They'll get a feeding tube placed, and either the mare's milk or milk replacer will be used to feed that foal. They're going to have support in helping them stand if they are having difficulty standing. A lot of these foals can go on and have even more severe neurologic signs like seizures, and they might need to have medications to control their seizures as well during this time period.
With like CRIs and midazolam?
Or? Yeah, so we use midazolam, and sometimes we can put them on a medication called Keppra to kind of control those seizures as well, depending on how often they're having them.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully as they kind of respond to this supportive care, they'll eventually learn to nurse again and do those things. But again, that can take quite some time.
Okay. Keppra is like the new like anti-seizure drug for dogs. They love it.
Yeah. It's easy to give.
Yeah.
You know, we have some pharmacokinetic studies in horses. They absorb it and it works. So.
And it's not toxic like phenobarbital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wonder if they used to use phenobarbital in horses.
Yeah. For those, we have a subset of foals that are Arabian foals that have a condition called juvenile idiopathic epilepsy. And phenobarb is one of the ones that we use most often for that, but lately we've been potentially trying Keppra and some of those foals too.
Do those horses actually make it though?
Yeah, they grow out of their seizures.
Really?
Luckily. So they have seizures, it's usually when they're just a couple months old, and they can have them up to the first year of life, and then they just kind of stop having them.
How does that happen?
They have a genetic mutation, and luckily they grow out of it.
You grow out of a genetic mutation? Doesn't seem possible, but okay.
There's a human condition that's similar.
Really?
They haven't identified the gene for this one in foals yet, but they seem to, if you can control them and not let them get hurt while they're having their seizures for the first couple months of their life, then they usually stop by the time they're a year old.
And Arabians have lots of genetic
issues. There's a whole panel of things to test for your Arabians.
Arabians, they at least have four or five different things that they'll die early, like, as babies. Yeah. Kind of manage their neurologic issues, feed them in the hospital, and then some of these guys will also get septic too, right, at the same time?
Is your foal septic? Is your foal one of these dummy foals? Or is it both? A lot of times they kind of go hand in hand with these really severely sick foals. They maybe start off septic and then kind of get behind and start to act a little dummy, or maybe they start to act a little dummy and kind of get behind on fluids and things and then also are septic at the same time. So they're usually also being treated with broad spectrum antibiotics, other medications for supportive care like vitamin E as a anti-inflammatory and to help support the neurologic system, fluid therapy since these foals often can't nurse or often can't handle the high loads of milk that they need for nutrition.
And you need to be careful with fluid therapy in a foal, right?
Yes.
You can drown them quickly.
You can fluid overload them really carefully, so we're really specific with their doses that they get of fluids.
Yeah, so it's not something we're going to do on the farm.
And it's not something that we can maintain on
the
farm. You know, we can go out and kind of stabilize this foal and get it ready to go into the hospital, but we can't maintain nutrition or fluid support on the farm beyond just kind of resuscitation and getting them prepped to go.
We had a patient this week that became septic.
So had a completely normal foal lane, normal IgG, but unfortunately it's foal, so anything can really happen. Was having some difficulty getting up and nursing appropriately and just kind of got behind on its fluids, blood glucoses, and was in the hospital and growing a positive blood culture.
We sent it in the hospital. We ultrasounded it on the field, and like we talked about before, the umbilicus looked good at the time. Maybe a little enlarged, but not horrible. But we ultrasounded its lungs, and it had pneumonia.
Yep.
And its serum amyloid A was highly elevated, which is very abnormal in a foal. So those two things alone, we were going to send the foal in, and because he couldn't nurse, there's even a third reason. I think if we didn't send that foal in, the foal would have died.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And it, again, you know, we found these abnormalities, but the foal didn't look that bad on the farm. We got it up, it could nurse, it could still do those things, but having a couple of these other checks, checking the boxes, you know, it made us want to send that foal in for a lot more care.
And I think it's the importance of your veterinarian having the appropriate diagnostics, right? If you just had, if we just done a physical exam on that foal, we would have been like, maybe he's okay, hold the mare better.
He just needs help getting up.
Yeah, he just needs help getting up, but we had that serum amyloid A that told us, ooh, it gave us more of a clue, and then we ultrasounded them, which I think is basic care for a foal. And his lungs had pneumonia. Yeah. And he's, what, 3 days old?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not normal.
Yeah.
So he had to go in the hospital. I would have sent him in anyways for pneumonia without his SAA being elevated, but with the SAA elevated.
Yeah, it just kind of confirms there's more going on than what meets the eye with these guys. And you have to act really fast with foals because they can decompensate really quickly.
Yeah, and the client brought the foal in, followed our advice, and he's on broad-spectrum antibiotics. He became septic, or bacteremic at least. Would he qualify as sepsis?
Mm-hmm.
He would. Yeah. He fit the criteria.
Positive blood culture.
This is not bacteriuremic?
Technically, you know, he had other abnormalities
physical
exam and mentation that kind of fits those.
Okay, so he can fall into that qualification.
Okay. That.
Because the pneumonia could have been from blood origin, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
So he's a little septic foal, but I think he's going to make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's responding well, but again, if we lagged even 12 hours, that might have been too long.
He would have been much sicker behind the eight ball. The other thing, too, so if they have a positive blood culture, the blood goes everywhere, of course. That's how you stay oxygenated. But it can go, it likes to go to joints. So you have little bacteria riding around the blood, and they go to the joints. And you can get a septic joint pretty quickly in a foal.
Yeah, so if they have that bacteria in their bloodstream, be when this foal is 5, 6, 7 days old, they get a swollen joint, and that is an emergency. Most of the time they're sick, and you know they're sick if that's going to happen, but sometimes they can still inoculate themselves in other ways. And if you find a foal that has a swollen joint, that is an emergency and not something to take lightly at all.
So the bacteria is going to set up shop in the joint. There's two issues. One, the foal will be painful and won't nurse anymore.
Yeah.
And now we go down a whole other route of not nursing. Foal is going to get sicker and sicker. Then from an orthopedic standpoint, the cartilage is going to get destroyed in that joint.
That foal's only a couple days old, and if you start to damage the cartilage at 7 days old, the prognosis for that animal to be a good athletic career goes down.
And not only can it stay in the cartilage, it can jump into the physis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And get septic physis.
And
get a bone infection too. So any large joint on a foal is an emergency. Not even going to tap them on the farm. I'm just going to send them in.
Yeah, because what we can get as far as information on the farm, we can do radiographs, we can see maybe if it's already affected on a radiograph, but in the hospital we can do a CT and look at that bone much more in depth, and what we might miss on a radiograph we can catch on a CT.
We'll miss a lot in a radiograph.
Yes.
So a CT, 3D x-rays. I don't actually know the physics of all of it, but it's just an x-ray that goes all the way around, and then it builds a 3D image, and you can see it in three different planes instead of two. We had another little foal that had that wound over its physis that we sent in.
Yeah, we took radiographs on the farm. There was an area that looked a little sketchy on the radiographs, and you know, the risk of missing a septic joint or a septic physis is so large that, you know, taking them in, getting that CT, getting that additional information is well worth the money.
And the CT is not super expensive, surprisingly.
No, and if they're coming in just for that, they're healthy otherwise, and the CT is clean, they usually go home the next day.
Mm-hmm.
If they need the care, then they're already under anesthesia first at the CT, and go ahead and get treatment right then for it.
Yeah, so how are we going to treat the septic joint?
So septic joints are going to require quite a bit of care, so intravenous antibiotics directly into the leg that is affected, and that's called a regional limb perfusion. And we're also going to lavage that joint with lots and lots of fluids to kind of get rid of a lot of the infection, or hopefully, you know, dilute what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to put antibiotics directly into that joint as well.
Yeah, so antibiotics alone is not going to fix it. We need to get the bacteria out of there with the flushing it. All the nasty cytokines that set up shop in that joint, they're bad.
That, again, is not something that we can successfully treat on the farm.
No, never.
So.
Never. I mean, yeah, you can, but, you know, we have to do this under clean conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it under dirty conditions, they're just going to let more bacteria in that joint.
Maybe seed something that wasn't
even
there.
It was going to make it worse. So septic joints, big deal, especially, I mean, for its life expectancy, but also for its athletic career.
Yeah, if you've got a standard bred, thoroughbred quarter horse that's meant to have a pretty intense athletic career, then those need to be treated pretty aggressively.
What about a miniature horse?
miniature horse maybe could go on and do okay for what it needs to do. Still needs to be treated in the hospital, but...
Yeah, it'd be less money, too. It's like treating money. A dog.
Yeah.
But some miniature horses pull carts.
Yeah.
And jump over little fences. I jumped one the other day with a lead rope. It was very cute. It was a good little horse. So most miniatures aren't athletic.
Yeah.
But these ones were. And they were the right body condition, too.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, for them. So they don't get laminitis. Probably any other big issues that we worry about in the foal? I'm sure you've seen some weird genetic defects. And we had a foal in the hospital the other day that a portosystemic shunt. That was an interesting case that they just... that's a very rare disease.
Identified it on a CT.
Yeah, identified it on a CT. And, you know, we don't look for them often.
Yeah.
But I think without the CT, I don't know if we would have found it.
Yeah, it was, you know, suspected, but the CT confirmed it. And so there's a lot of ways that we can use the CT for a foal.
Yeah. Yeah, and the whole foal can fit in the CT. Whereas an adult horse, you can only get its head in or its legs. But the foal fits in the entire CT. And people always call the hospital and they're like, can I get in your MRI? And we're like, no. They're human MRIs. Like, they don't make...
We're not
allowed to run it anyways. They're just human machines with the largest bore capacity. So, yeah, it's not like the whole horse can fit into this thing. That's not how the physics work of these imaging modalities. Let's talk about costs a little, right? Because we've kind of... I would say the majority of foals are healthy, right? No? You don't think so?
I think
the majority of foals don't end up in the hospital. How's that?
True.
I mean, they probably all get rotococcus, but that's in a whole other conversation. But so the majority of foals are somewhat healthy, don't need to come into the hospital. But when they do, it's expensive, right?
It is.
So if you are planning for a successful outcome from breeding to selling this horse as a yearling or as a two-year-old or just using it as a show horse, I don't think we talk a lot about the downstream like costs, right? There's the breeding costs, there's the costs of feeding the mare for 11 months, and then there's the costs of the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Even a normal healthy baby is gonna have at least one exam, maybe two. And those costs are minimal. But what about if it goes in the hospital? Like, what should people plan on? Because we talked about this earlier. We're not certain if you can insure. I mean, you probably can, a lot of money, insure the fetus. Most people don't have insurance on a foal. So now we're kind of cash in hand type of thing. What is a normal cost? What kind of estimate do you give?
Yeah, so if we are sending a foal into the hospital, on average, it's going to be probably around $4,000 to $6,000. And they're going to be here for a few days if they're getting fluid, nutrition support, and antibiotics, and whatever other diagnostics and care they need.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking between four and six.
Yeah, which really is not a lot of money when you consider a dog TPLO surgery is now $6,000. This is a discount.
Yeah.
What about in Kentucky? What does it cost down there? Similar?
I think their prices are actually somewhat similar to ours. The population of horses that they have might go on and get more intensive treatments and rack up the bill a little bit larger. But
so they might have longer stays. Whereas like, so sometimes we have to have the conversation with the client that we're at your $6,000 limit. Your foal needs another probably 2 weeks to get better.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be another $6,000 to $10,000, maybe $15,000. And then the clients are like, I don't have any more money to do this. And we end up euthanizing the foal.
Yeah.
How many foals do you think in your time in the hospital for the last 5 years, like what do you that have to stop because of financial reasons?
I'd say once they come in, and they're here and someone is willing to kind of do that 4 to 6, they're willing to go on until that foal is better.
Yeah.
I'd say it's that initial coming into the hospital, kind of poor prognosis or guarded prognosis, and this is what we need, are going to be the ones that we kind of stop way earlier on versus the ones that if we have to keep adding.
Yeah. So whereas in Kentucky, the guarded prognosis might keep going because it was...
For $10,000, $20,000.
Yeah, because, well, a lot of the time, like, the breeding contracts are, as long as the foal hits the ground alive, they owe $500,000 to the stud.
Yeah.
So what's another $20,000?
To make sure you have a healthy foal.
Make sure you have a healthy foal. But if you had, you know, a free live cover out in the field, you know, maybe you don't have $20,000 more dollars to spend. But I think that's something to think about if you want to get into the breeding game.
Yeah.
That there are other expenses to have. It's just not all fun and games.
Yeah, we've got to have a couple thousand dollars mm-hmm. to treat a potential complication with that foal.
So, you know, like most financial advisors recommend having an emergency fund, right? So self-insurance. So yeah, you kind of have to have a self-insurance of $5,000. Right now, interest rates are 4.7% and just, you know, a nice money market account. So, you know, make a little extra money on the side to pay for the foal. That's super important to kind of have those expectations that when you come to the hospital, I mean, to the small animal side, it's really cheap over here, but yeah. it's, which is a whole other conversation that we could have, but.
Yeah, I think if you're just kind of prepared that, you know, this foal might get sick. If this foal gets sick, I'm prepared to, you know, potentially go into the hospital, and this is what it's gonna cost.
And they don't have to. You can opt not to, but then, you know, you have to think about what about all the labor costs that you had for the last year?
Yeah.
Like, so kind of make those financial decisions before you breed that mare. Yeah, because it's stressful because you expect your foal to be born healthy and then it's not.
Yeah.
And you haven't really thought about it. So planning ahead is key, I think, to life, especially to the mare and foal. Especially to foals, because it's going to go wrong. Anything else to add, Dr. Timko, about foals that you think we've kind of left out? Except they're really cute.
They are. They're very cute. I guess the biggest take home is if you suspect there's an issue, contact your veterinarian sooner rather than later, because these foals can go downhill pretty fast. So
yeah, and if your veterinarian's not comfortable with foals, like most tertiary referral centers are open. You don't need the referral to come in.
Yeah. Yeah, like if you're concerned and can't get someone out.
And there's a shortage of equine veterinarians right now, so the probably likelihood of you getting someone to come in, who knows, right? It's we're stretched thin. And we can't make it to every farm anymore. So, yeah, come into the hospital and we'll get you taken care of. Well, thanks for listening to Horse Talk with Doc. If you like this podcast, share it with your friends, talk us up, like and subscribe so more people can get some evidence-based medicine in equine care.